Naveed, thank you so much for coming.
Welcome
to Quiddity Education Podcast. Naveed here is from Healy's. He's one of our top three lawyers that we use. And actually, relationship-wise, it's probably about a year old. Not that long.
Yeah, no, I was thinking, I think we're probably just over a year now.
Just over a year, right? Yeah. And this come about because when we came to see you, we were growing and we needed new people, good people. And very quickly, you've come to the top of our list of how much business we are now sending you because guess what? Because you're very good, you get more business. So thank you so much for taking the time today to come and speak to us about law, title splitting, and more importantly, what is it that you do for us that makes our life a lot easier? Ultimately, the reason why we use the team that we use is because it makes our life easier because you know how to get things right the first time.
Yeah.
So, in terms of getting straight into it, so in terms of title split, so what is title split from a lawyer's perspective? What are we doing?
Yeah, so ultimately, title split, you're looking at owning a freehold, and then you want to, you know, you've got multiple units within this freehold.
Yeah.
And rather than having it on one title, you're splitting it so that you're holding the individual flats on separate leasehold titles. So each flat will have its own title at land registry.
So it's a disaggregation thing that I say,
ultimately,
right?
Yeah.
And I say in a very silly way, I say, look, it's like going to Costco and buying toilet tissues in bulk, coming to your little corner shop and then splitting them and then selling them on a unit basis.
Yeah.
Okay. So the bit that you are doing here on a kind of like legality perspective, what is that?
So we're doing the actual creations of the titles.
Okay.
So obviously there's multiple ways of doing it, but what we normally see and what we do with you and obviously the mentees is that we're creating new leases.
Yeah.
So within that freehold, you've got six units.
Yeah.
We'll create a lease for each unit.
Okay.
And then that will get registered at land registry. And then you'll have six individual leasehold titles.
And thus the disaggregation.
Exactly.
What happens to the freehold then?
So the freehold will stay in the entity that bought it originally.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you'll be the whoever owns that freehold will be the landlord.
Yes.
Of the leases.
Of the leases. Yeah.
Yeah. Correct.
Okay. Perfect. So typically, what we do for people who are listening here is we will have one Quiddity freehold, freehold holding company where all the freehold will go to.
Yeah.
And then we'll have a main company that will then hold all the leases. That's the one that goes on and takes all the mortgages.
Correct.
Perfect. Okay. So that's fairly a quick snapshot of what the legalities look like and what is it that you do in terms of leases. When it comes to creating a lease, then what are the key components of a lease that you ask your clients to then give to you for these buildings?
So the main thing that we want to know is the main components are obviously lease terms.
Yeah. So 999 years.
Which is mostly what we'll see.
Yeah.
The premiums is obviously very important.
Yes.
And that will come from valuations.
So here's a question that everybody asks. So mentees will say at some point when they come to this stage and they will say, oh, well, Naveed is asking me what's the premium am I putting on?
Yeah.
So what is the, is this you that says what the premium is? Is this the, who tells them or who tells us what the premium is?
Ultimately, the premium is what the value of that flat is.
Okay.
Solicitors obviously can't give that information. So you'd get it from, most of the times we'll see it from if you've got your offer in place, it'll be on the offer. So it's the valuers who have gone in, valued the property.
Yeah.
This is what we've got the value out of this flat at.
Okay.
So that's what we put down as the
premium. You put down. So here's an example of where typically, we obviously the surveyors will go out and actually see the six flats in this example. And they will say, flat one, it's a two-bedroom flat, and we think it's worth right now 120 grand.
Yeah.
But once we split it, it might be worth 170,000 pounds.
Yeah.
So which bit of it, and again, I'm cautious to ask you this because this is a lender question more than anything else.
Yeah.
But I want to kind of share with listeners to say that it's not the 170 future value, it's more the 120 current value is what the lenders and the want you to put down.
Correct, because at the time you're creating the leases, it's what's the value at this moment in time.
Yes.
That's what you're putting down as a premium.
Yes, because a lot of people, as you can see in our business, people want it to be the 170 because the lending can be done on the 170.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, and rightly so, currently on the day that they visit, it's worth 120,000.
Yeah.
So that's the premium that you put down.
Correct.
Fine. So you've got premium, you've got number of years in the lease.
Yeah.
What about ground rent?
So ground rent, obviously, this is an important one because recently there was a change in the law where long leases, ground rent has to be a peppercorn.
Yes. So what's a peppercorn?
Peppercorn is, it's ultimately an old phrase where they'd say that you'd
we know lawyers love a good old phrase, right?
Yeah, we do have the old phrases.
Yeah.
But it's ultimately is zero. The ground rent would be zero per annum.
Okay.
So there'd be no ground rent that's payable.
So am I right in saying the peppercorn was back in 1800? Yeah. It was literally a peppercorn.
Yeah.
Right.
So your landlord would knock on the door and be like, "We're collecting the rent," and you give them one peppercorn.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't think I would be expecting peppercorn from my leases now. Yeah. But so from 2023, if I remember right, the government got rid of ground rents.
Correct.
So now it's only peppercorn rent. So when you come to creating leases, you're not even asking us anymore. No. You'll just put peppercorn rent.
We just put it in the leases.
Fine. Why was that removed? Why was ground rent removed?
I mean, ultimately, you're paying a premium.
Correct.
So you're paying a double.
You're almost doubling your cost.
Ultimately, it's a little bit unfair on the leaseholders where you're paying a premium up front.
Yes.
For a long, and now you've got this lease for 999 years, let's say.
Yes.
So ultimately, in those years, it's not really going to go back to the freeholder.
To the freeholder.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're now, not only have they got this lump sum up front, but you're now paying a yearly fee, which usually used to be there'd be rent review provisions in there. So you'd have the rent might double every 5 years, every 10 years.
Yeah.
And imagine you have a 999 year lease. That's double. The rent is doubling every 10 years. Let's just say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, after a little while, that's going to become quite a high amount.
Unaffordable, and a lot of the lenders don't take them on anymore because they've had to undo them.
The issue was with lenders coming in, and having a problem with that.
Yes. Okay. Marriage value, Naveed. What is marriage value, and how is it? How does it calculate it, and when do you pay it?
Yeah, so marriage value is so when you have a lease, and it depends on the amount of years remaining on the lease.
Okay.
So if, let's just say you had a lease of 100, so you see this a lot with leases that have already been created. So
yes, the older leases.
They may have been created for, the lease term was 125 years, let's just say. You've gone about 40, 50 years into that now.
Yes.
So obviously the lease term's coming closer to the end.
Yeah.
And the marriage value is the value of what's remaining.
Okay.
Let's just say.
So in your example, we bought, it was 125 years. It's now down to about 79 years.
So you look
Is there a cutoff point for the marriage value?
So what you look at, and again, this comes from, I think, lenders.
Yes.
Is they have criteria of, there has to be a minimum term of
years
left.
And
again, it varies.
Yes.
You know, you'll get some that say it has to be 80 years.
Yes.
Some who say 75 years, some who say 60 years.
Yes.
So you get to a certain point and you have to have basically get your marriage value in before that time.
Gotcha.
The way it's done, similar to how you'd calculate your value on a premium, is you'd get someone who's experienced in that, so maybe a surveyor. To go in, you look at the market value, but obviously then there's a calculation that they have. Again, it's not something that we would get involved in, so I don't know the exact calculation.
Yes.
They would work out what the calculation of that is.
Yeah.
And that would be your
And then that's what you have to pay for the freeholder.
That's what there's a process to go through with your freeholder.
Yeah.
But that is your premium to pay them.
Okay. Yeah. Because one of the things that I'm literally doing right now is and it's a bad reflection of my management. And one of the buildings that we bought years ago when I first started, the leases dropped below 80.
Okay.
And I didn't realize until it got to about 75 years and then, or 70 years or whatever it is. And I thought, you know what, this whole leasehold reform happening, maybe if I hang on long enough, I'm not going to have to pay this marriage value because the marriage value right now, and I've just had it re-triggered again, and I'm due to pay £28,000, right, to get it back to 125 years. Now, the challenge was I thought maybe should I play the years game on that leasehold reform. Yeah. I may not have to do it. It's been 5 years. This leasehold reform is still going.
No.
So I've taken the view that actually I'm just going to pay for it now and pay the freeholder the £28,000. And like you say, I had a surveyor go out on both our behalf, value it to say, today it's worth X, tomorrow with a long lease is worth Y.
Yeah.
That extra is what we're asking you to pay.
Yeah.
And that's quite punitive. And I hope at some point we get to a point where ground rent's taken out. And I think this marriage value thing with 999 years lease new is going to be taken out.
I mean, I think with the 999-year leases...
It gets rid of it.
It gets rid of it.
Yes.
Basically, anyway.
Yes, yeah. I think.
Like I said, it's more on the... and you had the same issues. An older one that you purchased, the lease is already there.
Correct.
They were only for 125 years.
Correct.
And a lot of people don't realize that you have this, you know, when it gets to the 80 years,
yes,
you've got this problem.
And lots of people, exactly. I mean, I bought it maybe at from 125, I bought it with 100 years.
Yeah.
And then 20 years later, it's kind of down to lower, and less lenders want to lend you on it.
Of course, yeah.
Okay, so what's your top 10 must-have that you expect every client to have to be ready before they start? Maybe not top 10, but you know, your top things that people need to be ready to come to you with when they're title splitting a block of flats. So you bought them.
Yeah.
Now we're going to title split. So what do you expect clients to have?
So the main things is the information that we talked about in terms of leases. We'd obviously like to have that because that helps us draft the leases. You want your lease plans, because I've come across this a few times where we've drafted leases. We're like, can we get the lease plans? Oh, lease plans? Don't. Can you not do that? Well, no. Yeah. We can put you in touch with someone.
Yes.
Who can get, but ideally, we'd like those to already be ready. So we've got those.
Yeah.
If works have been done at the property that required planning permission,
We
obviously want the planning permissions, the building regs, sign-offs. And another thing is, obviously, a lot of the times it comes to us, they're already tenanted.
Yeah.
So we want the tenancy documents. And the main thing with the tenancy, obviously, everyone has the tenancies.
Yeah.
But it's the compliance stuff that comes with it.
Yep.
So you got to have up-to-date gas safety certificates,
up-to-date
electrical installation reports. The EPCs have to be obviously in date and certain rating.
Yeah.
And obviously how to rent guides have been sent out, etc. Because obviously every lender will want to make sure that this has been done properly.
And I think this last bit you've just talked about has become the biggest problem now in terms of legally compliant tenancies in place for buildings that we're buying. Because we're buying buildings with 8, 10, 15 tenants in it.
Exactly.
The variability of that risk is higher.
Yeah.
So bearing in mind, and this is intended not as an offensive thing, but lawyers don't like taking risk.
Yeah.
So generally speaking, you would tell me and mentees, look, there's a big risk here you need to be aware of. And I think that's the most important bit of your kind of service that we get. Yeah. And then it's down to us to make sure that we take the risk or not.
Yeah.
So bearing in mind that the list that you've kind of talked about, the legally compliance, the EPC, the gas, the planning permission, there's a lot of stuff here. Yeah. So this is why it's so important to have experienced lawyers. Not every lawyer can do what you do. Yeah. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Because I think one of the things that people say, well, I can just go to the East Ham High Street lawyer and do that. Well, no, you can't, because the person who's actually filling the form for immigration cannot do what you do.
Definitely not.
And why is that?
Well, because of, I think, the things like I mentioned, there's all these little things that need to be looked at. And I think that it can be, if you don't know what you're doing, or it's not something that you're used to doing, you could easily miss something.
Yes.
Missing something like, you know, that there's gas safety certificates or electric, or that you've got them, but they're out of date.
Out of date.
Even one thing that I see a lot of the times is deposit protection schemes.
Yes.
Certificates. Obviously, there's people send them, we've protected our deposit. But there's a time frame in which you have to do it.
Yes.
And if you miss that time frame, although you've got the certificate, you haven't complied with the legislation.
Yes.
These things can be missed. And this is obviously, not only is it a risk for the client, but you've got a lender involved here.
Yes.
So that's added risk. Because obviously the lender is reliant on you to confirm that all this stuff has been done. Yeah. They're not going to want copies of the documents.
No.
They want you to confirm.
To say that you've checked it and it's fine.
And I think that's why solicitors are very risk adverse.
Risk adverse.
Because not only are you acting for the client, there's that added risk of where we need to report to the lender as well.
Yeah. And I think you're being modest to say that actually, yes, it's just about a tick box exercise. It's not. I think the skill set that you guys have developed over time, you, some of the other lawyers that we use, it is that much more. It's a niche strategy. It's a very skilled, almost very precise science that we're working on.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of information that you've got to get through.
Exactly.
And the building that I buy today is different to the building that MNT is buying tomorrow in a different area with different... kind of expectations and different tenant types as well. So I think the risk is getting higher and higher. And that's why I think it's important to have people like yourself on here to talk about those risks. Because once we know and identify the risks, then mentees, myself, we can come to you guys and say, okay, this is the building. What do you think? And then we get the list of challenges. And the lenders, people listening here, the lenders are concerned because if you default, they pick up the property again, and then there's tenants in there that are not legally compliant ASCs. They cannot then take them or get the evicted, and then it becomes a massive nightmare for them. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And that's their biggest concern.
Yes.
Is that lenders are always looking at what's the worst case?
Yes.
A worst case being if there's a default and we have to retake this property, are we going to be able to do what we need to do?
Yes, to recoup our money.
Recoup our money. And ultimately, when there's tenanted properties, that's the thing of, can we get vacant possession? How quickly and easily can we do that?
Yes.
So we need to make sure everything is done correctly.
Correctly. Okay. So changing tact a little bit, talking about auctions now.
Yeah.
This is the...
I love auctions.
Yeah, exactly. You love auctions, but... and I know one question that everybody, all lawyers say, and if you don't say it, I'm going to remind you of that, everybody that says that. So what are the key legal documents that you check? Now, bearing in mind, just people listening here, watching this here, legal packs are so varied depending on what you're buying.
Yeah.
But are there some common main things you will go to as a lawyer? Okay, that's the first thing I will start with. What would that be?
I mean, the first thing I always start with is the title.
Okay. Okay.
Because you want to see that, you know, obviously we've got some information. We'll have a sales memo, etc.
Yes.
So that'll have details of the seller. So you want to check the title. Is the person who's selling this property the owner of the property?
Yes.
I've had instances when titles have come through to me.
Wow.
And it's somebody else. And then you have, well, hold on. Why is this person
selling something that doesn't belong to them?
So we'll check the title. So the main things that I'm looking for in a auction pack, title documents.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're going to have the contract, special conditions.
Yes.
There should be searches in there.
Yes.
Not always the case.
Not always the case, yeah.
But usually you want the searches in there, the property information forms.
Okay.
And then obviously any planning documents, etc., should be in there as well.
Okay. Okay. So there's quite a lot of information that has to be there that sometimes the auctioneers may or may not have included.
Yeah.
Okay. So timelines now.
Yeah.
So I'm buying something in auction. The auction's coming up in 2 days' time, and I ring you. Yeah. I'm not me.
Yeah.
We don't have that relationship.
Yeah.
You get a client that rings you, says, "You know, I'm buying this block of 16 flats in 2 days' time.
Yeah.
Can you help me have a look at legal pack?" Yeah. What would you say?
I was like, "Thanks for calling me. we've 2 days to go."
Yeah.
To be honest, it all comes down to one thing with me is, and I've mentioned this to you as well, is doing the best you can for the client.
Yes.
So if I'm in a position where I'm like, "Look, this is something that is not a 5-minute job.
Yes.
This is going to take some time. I right now don't have the time to do it. Yeah. I'm not going to do a job that's not full." But you got to tell the client, "Look, there's a lot of information there. The problem with 2 days to go is we can do a review of the auction pack.
Yeah.
We can do a report on the auction pack.
Yes.
We can tell you what the issues are.
Yes.
But the problem you're going to have now is there's only 2 days to go. You're not really having a lot of time to
assess it
and then potentially rectify any of these.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of an issue with auction packs, what a lot of people don't sometimes realize is that once you've purchased it at auction, ultimately you've exchanged contracts.
Yeah, you've got to complete.
Otherwise,
you're going to lose your
deposit. Otherwise, you're going to lose your deposit.
Yes.
And so really you want to do that review in advance. I know 2 days is in advance, but probably a little bit more than that.
Yes, especially complicated.
Especially when you're looking at doing a title split.
Yes,
you want to make sure that that's something that you're going to.
So in a kind way, you would say, "Thank you, but no thank you."
I mean, ultimately, again, if we can, we've got a team at Heedy. Yeah. So obviously, it's not just myself. But
yes,
I'll talk to the team. Look, can we get this done?
Yes,
but we always look at, yeah, we can get it done, but it's not going to be a great job.
Yes.
No, we're not going to do it then.
And I think people, we will respect that more to say, "Look, you know, 2 days to go, it's crazy." And I will always say to my mentees that will come to me and say, "Oh, it's an auction thing. I need a lawyer to have a review." I said, "Yeah, I've got a load."
Yeah.
But I tell you what, if you've got 2 days, I'm not even going to tell them about it because they're going to tell you to go away because they're not going to put their reputation on the line and get things wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. So, your top hicks when clients come to you. What would be a top three or top five? What really great? It's a bit annoying.
Yeah. Well, one of the things is I think some clients come to us thinking that this is this is something that should happen very quickly.
Just like that.
Yeah. Especially when it's an exit. Yes. So we already own the freehold. So like we just sign a couple of documents and we're done, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, no, there's still a lot of work to be done here.
Yeah. So is that naivety or is that?
I think it's normally the ones who are new to this.
Yes.
That's what they think that is. You know, the ones who are experienced, like for example, when you come to me and you know, like, all right, well, Naveed's got to do some work here.
Yes.
I'll let him get on with it.
Yes.
And you know, he'll come back to me. But yeah, I think there's that. Sometimes there's an unrealistic expectation that, you know, this is a very easy thing to be done.
Yes.
Because we already own the freehold and ultimately the leases are going to a group company. So,
yes.
You know, it's all in-house. We can get it done. And it's like, the way we have to look at it is this is still a separate legal entity. You're still transferring the title. We still got to do the normal process.
Yes.
So I'd say that's my biggest thing is the unrealistic expectation.
Managing their expectation of it. Yeah.
Then too, again, just going back to things that we'd like clients to have. You have clients who don't have most of it or none of it.
Yes.
And then it's sort of, all right, well, we're now chasing you. I need all these things. They're taking their time to get it across to us.
And I think that must be, I mean, I'm the other way. I'm like, I've already got everything ready. I'm pushing you to get things done. But I think that's also when people are getting into a strategy like title split. There's so much stuff they don't know until they get to this point. Say, hang on a minute, like the floor plan. You know, floor plan is a very big one where, again, like lawyers, like brokers, over the last 15 years, I've kissed many folks to get to people that we've paid cheap. And then we get to the land register point and said, no, hang on, that's not to the spec. Right, go back and fix it again.
Yeah.
Now we've got the mortgage offers running out. Then we've got the lawyers who have done the work, who've already billed you for something.
Yeah.
And said, hang on, I've got to undo it again and do it again. So it is, I think a lot of it, this is where, you know, sometimes the mentorship makes a lot of sense because we literally are hand-holding people through the process as well as the team.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think I've seen that as well in terms of we've had, sort of before we started working, you'd have clients who'd want to do something similar. It wasn't on this scale, but something similar. And they didn't really have all the information there.
Mm.
And we were obviously then guiding them as we were going along. But again, that takes time because if they're already ready, it cuts down the time.
Yes.
Whereas obviously your mentees that are coming through where you've given them that guidance.
Yes.
They come sort of, even if it's their first transaction.
Yes.
They've got an idea of what needs to be done and they come somewhat prepared for it.
Yeah, because also, as a lawyer, you know the lawyering bit of the strategy.
Exactly.
But there's the finance bit.
Yeah.
There is another, there's floor plan bit. There is the development bit. Yeah. There's so many of those things that has to come together.
Correct.
For it to be ready.
Yeah.
And I think that's the bit where I think the mentorship and certainly the, at least being aware of the process helps the whole process. Okay, so there's two major changes that are happening and I'm going to ask you the light version of it.
Yeah.
So one is renters reform and two is leasehold reform.
Yeah.
So let's talk the first one first, renters reform. In a nutshell, and again, I know in the company there are specific lawyers who specialize in renters reform. Can you share with us what are the kind of the key things that we need to be aware of? And I know I'm going to get your colleagues to come in and share more information later on. Yeah. What would you say about the kind of the top things that people need to be aware of about what's going to happen about renters reform as a landlord?
Yeah, so again, like you mentioned, this is something that's more in the expertise of other people within the firm.
Yes.
Not really something that's more my forte.
Your bag, yes.
But ultimately, it's going to be harder for once these, obviously, the reform's coming in.
Yes.
And I think it's going to come in.
It's a done deal.
Yeah, it's pretty much, you know, we're just waiting for it to be sealed. But
correct.
It's going to make it harder for landlords. Well, it's ultimately there to protect the tenants more.
Yes.
So it's going to become harder as a landlord to get, get possession of the property.
Yes. And one of the reasons why is because they're saying, you know, so right now we've got the assured shorthold tenancy.
Correct.
A tenancy agreement ends at 6 months, 12 months, whatever the timeline is.
Yeah.
That's going to get scrapped, right?
Correct.
And then all, and I've read and please correct me if I'm wrong, I've read that now when the law changes, anything that's already on an assured short-haul tenancy automatically becomes a periodic tenancy.
Correct. Yeah.
Which means what as a periodic tenancy?
So basically your tenant, there's no end date there. It's running.
Okay.
It's running periodically.
Yes.
So the what you mentioned about, you know, there was an end date and you could get, it's what they used to call a no-fault eviction. So it's not the fault of the tenant. They haven't done anything.
Yes.
They're perfectly good tenant.
Yes.
But obviously at the end of the lease, you can
terminate
this lease.
Yes.
Now, obviously, where that changes, you don't have that option anymore. So there has to be a reason why.
Yeah.
You know, and there'll be specific reasons.
And I understand that there's four reasons that you can really get your property back. So, but before I give you the four reasons, I find it really quite irritating when somebody says, oh, you know, no fault eviction. Actually, a landlord or somebody who's renting a property is a business, right? So they're not going to kick out a customer, a good customer, paying customer for no reason. There's always a reason.
Exactly.
What happened is, for people who are not aware, there are two real sections in the provision, Section 21 and Section 8. Section 8 is where people are not paying.
Yeah.
But that's a lot harder.
Yeah.
So by default, people use Section 21 as a mechanism to get people, to get bad tenants out.
Yeah.
And over time, that's why they've started to say, well, it's a no-fault eviction. It's not.
No,
there's always a fault somewhere there, right? And I'm saying the landlords are always the perfect one, but I think we have kind of gone overboard to protect tenants' rights in contrast to landlords.
Yeah.
So in terms of when it becomes a periodic tenancy, in my understanding now, there are going to be only four reasons that we can get this property back. One, you want to sell it.
Yeah.
And there are some major caveats that you can't just say, I'm going to put it on for sale. Yeah. You need to leave.
Yeah.
There's some major caveats of how long you can have to leave that empty before you can re-rent it again if you don't sell it. You want to sell it. You want to move it into yourself or your family wants to move into it.
Yeah.
As a second one, there's a problem with the tenant. So that's like an ASBO type, you know, what they call it. The tenants are, you know, disrupting
antisocial
behavior. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. But that's going to be unbelievably hard to prove.
Of course.
How are you going to prove? Yeah. You're going to put cameras there to check what they're doing? You know, that's almost a no-go.
Yeah.
And the fourth one is basically where they're not paying. Yeah. And the not paying bit is, I guess, what's going to become the bigger section to use.
Yeah.
Our concern, and I don't know what your thoughts are on this, our concern is the courts are so clogged already.
Yeah.
It's taken me 4 months to get from non-paying tenants to now eviction bailiffs. We're talking about 5 months.
Yeah.
My fear is you take out Section 21.
Yeah.
That's just going to get in the way because we can't make any more judges. Right? No. There's not enough judges. Yeah. They were talking about a court for properties. That's not happened either. No. What are your thoughts on those?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that ultimately it's just going to take so much longer now for anything to get through the courts. Like you mentioned, they're already backed up as it is.
Yes.
And then now you're going to get to a point where the only way to evict a tenant is to going through that process. Imagine how long it's going to take for you to actually get possession of the property.
And you see why lots of people are now thinking, God, no I'm not going to go into this anymore.
Yeah. We've seen a lot of people who were just starting to get into it who have now had a second thought.
Really?
You've got, obviously, portfolio landlords who've been doing it for a while, they've got a large, you know, large portfolio. They're going to stick to it. Most of the time, they've got tenants that are really good. They're happy with them. They're like, well, we're not really going to look to change them.
Yes.
But ones coming in, they're looking at all these reforms and they're like, well, actually, why would I do this? It's just going to make it harder for me to actually do anything.
Yes. And I think for me, there is something more fundamental, and I talk about it constantly, and I want to know your thoughts on it, not from a lawyer perspective, but somebody who's in the industry.
Yeah.
And I find that in the next 5 years or so, I think there's been, well, the past 8 years, there's massive changes. The Tory government changed the rules around who can invest in properties. So they've gone from no businesses can invest to every business can invest. So you've got John Lewis, Lloyd's Bank, you've got, last week I heard, or I read on the FT, a big Canadian pension fund has now moved £4 billion of money to buy private residential properties.
Yeah.
So you can see big money are coming
in. Of course.
So you've got that side, and then you've got on the other side, massive overregulation on individual landlords.
Exactly.
And to me, when I put them two together and I keep talking about it, and that you as somebody coming into properties, you need to scale quickly.
Yeah.
You need to have this scale so you can actually compete against those regulations.
Exactly.
If you're having two or three, you're going to get drowned out.
No,
right?
100%.
And I think title splitting as a strategy is really, I think, the only way you can actually buy 6, 10, 15, 20 at a time.
Yeah.
And you can bulk up your property portfolio.
Correct.
My challenge is, if you don't do that, individual will get drowned out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think then in 5 years from now, we will get a situation where the big corporation will lobby the government again. Hang on a minute. How can you tell me I can't get rid of tenants?
Yeah.
Right. Let's not change the law again.
Yeah.
And my, it's not even a guess anymore. I think I can see that happening. It's just one of those things. What are your thoughts on that as a final of thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point that you made. Because I can, now that you mentioned it, you can see that happening.
You can see individual stuff, but once you put it together,
exactly. You see it as individual, because the businesses can come in and there's this money coming in and all these companies are doing it.
Yeah.
And you think, all right, if you look at that isolated, that makes sense. They've got the opportunity to do it. Why not do it?
Yes.
And then you see the new legislation, you're like, all right, it makes it harder for individuals to buy, you know, like you said, single, you're buying one at a time.
Yep.
So they're like, oh, well, actually, we don't want to do this because why would we?
Yeah.
So now you're going to have
a taxation bit as well on private landlords.
Exactly, as well.
Yeah.
So now you've got a scenario where all these companies are buying up.
Yeah.
Individuals aren't.
Yeah.
And then you can see them saying, well, hold on. Why should it be harder for us?
Yeah. Otherwise, I'll pull my weight.
I've put all this money in, this investment in.
Yep.
I'll take it out.
Yes.
Put that pressure on the government.
Yes. And I think that's something where I reckon in 5 years from now, we'll be in that position where they've got rid of all the individuals.
Exactly.
And it's going to be corporations that owns them.
Yeah. And you're going to go back to a position that you were in, which was beneficial to the individuals.
Yeah.
But now you've kind of phased them out.
Yes. And I think nobody's going to complain about JP Morgan or any of those firms because they face these companies.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas individual guy who's got one house, you can beat them up.
Yeah.
On that note, Naveed, thank you so much
for
coming out and actually speaking to us about title split, legals, challenges, and also more importantly, hopefully, as we go forward over the next years or so, we can work more things together. Like on the 19th of November, we've got this event that we're hosting, and hopefully you and your colleague will attend. And it's about bringing the information you've got, a bit like we were talking about the silos, bringing it together in one place. We can then share that with people who then improves their decision making, and then eventually we come back to you to help us execute.
I think that's it's a really good event as well, and like you said, it has all the different components there,
yes,
all together.
Good. Yeah. But listen, I look forward to seeing you there as well. But thank you so much for taking time to come and speak to us today. And no doubt we will speak to you soon.
Yeah, speak to you soon.